Welcome to the Fuqua Show, for the stories, the lessons, and the passions of the Team Fuqua community at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. I'm your host, Jenna Houchins. In today's episode, we honor Women's History Month with our newly elected co-presidents of the Association of Women in Business, Kelsey Worsham and Rhea Phillip. Kelsey and Rhea were born in different countries and come from diverse professional backgrounds, but one of the many commonalities they share is their passion for female empowerment, supporting other women, and the pride they share in being a woman. In this episode, we discuss a range of topics, including the personal experiences related to advocating for yourself and others, the female tech industry, navigating sexism in the workplace, allyship, and, of course, the famous Barbie monologue. It's an episode full of insight and inspiration for people of all genders who care about advancing women in business. Kelsey Worsham is a first-year daytime MBA student and one of the new co-presidents of the Association of Women in Business. Throughout her life, Kelsey has been very passionate about women's empowerment in both personal and professional areas, including consulting for female-founded businesses, pursuing a startup idea of her own, and volunteering her free time to support survivors of sexual violence. Outside of Fuqua, Kelsey enjoys using her first master's degree in English to maintain her love of reading and writing, officiating friends' weddings, and participating in burger crawls in the Durham area. Welcome, Kelsey.
Hey, Jenna. Thank you so much for having me today. Great to be here.
So is there anything else that you would like to share that did not in your intro?
Yes, I would like to share that it's really funny and kind of full circle to be here with Rhea today, because back in 2022, when we were both prospective students, we actually met at AWIB's Women's Leadership Weekend. So it's awesome to be here celebrating Women's History Month and to be co-president of AWIB with her.
That is a great segue. And our second guest for today is Rhea Phillip. Rhea Phillip is a self-described engineer by education, an operator at heart, and a curious wanderer. Rhea arrived at Fuqua after living and working in Canada and is now the co-president of the Association of Women in Business. She cares about pushing more women in STEM and occasionally speaks at her alma mater to bring prospective students into engineering. She also was a coach for the immigrant community, helping people to get acclimated with the job market. In undergrad, Rhea was voted most likely to be a late-night stand-up comedian, even though she goes to bed at 10 p.m. Welcome, Rhea.
Thank you, Jenna. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And same question to you. Is there anything you'd like to share that we didn't mention in your intro?
Nothing other than the fact that both Kelsey and I are both proud Section 6. And also, we did lead comms together, which is great because we understand each other's leadership style. So encountering this next journey with her is going to be so nice to build the next cabinet out for AWIB.
And one question for you both. Who is a woman that you look up to in your personal life?
I would like to dedicate this episode to my Mima, who was my dad's mom. She was by far the most powerful, influential female figure in my life. And I take her with me every day. So I like to think that I am bringing her into this call.
I would like to dedicate this podcast to my mother. I really do look up to her in terms of her perseverance, her ability to navigate countries and navigate an immigrant work life and work style. And I feel like a lot of what my mom has done has kind of just set me up for success. And I'm very thankful for that. So this one's for you.
Great. Well, thank you both for being here today. And for our listeners, moving forward, we will refer to the Association of Women in Business as AWIB, just so everyone is on the same page. So we will dive into this a bit deeper, but at a very high level, what was it about your first year at Fuqua that made you want to be so involved in AWIB moving forward?
Something that I felt like was very fortunate for me going into my first year at Fuqua was kind of immediately meeting this group of really kind, smart, interesting, supportive women. It felt like it immediately gave me this kind of connection here at Fuqua and this group of people to pick me up when, you know, we're stressed out with all of the things that are going on in fall one and just adjusting to MBA life in general. And so I feel like having that group for myself kind of cemented this kind of guiding mission that I have in my life that I really want to create communities for women to lift each other up, support each other, empower each other. I really owe it all to female friends that I have here at Fuqua. I just feel very grateful for them.
Yes. And from my end, I think this journey really started, like Kelsey mentioned, in 2022 during the Women's Leadership Weekend. And I think it was there when I met a couple of AWIB second years who were first years back then, and they indicated about negotiating your scholarship. And I think that was the first place for me where I had to become comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think just having them support me through how do I negotiate my scholarship with admissions and them paying it forward? I think that was my first preview into the Association of Women in Business and finding these wonderful women who went the extra mile to navigate me through such conversations. They shared templates with me. And I thought that was just beautiful because I've never had that kind of level of sharing in terms of expertise and experiences before. So to me, I almost think of it as a group of women that are coming together, looking at it from a very holistic perspective, whether it's mental health, physical health, careers, admissions. And so AWIB really caters to like both prospective students, current students, and then alumni.
That's wonderful. Thank you both for sharing. You both touch on really good points, especially just the power of the female community here at Fuqua, because I think one, it can be challenging to find in the world, nonetheless, in a business school environment, which is notoriously very competitive. And I think we're very fortunate for that. And so, Kelsey, going back to something you mentioned, you talked about this guiding mission that you have. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like my entire life, I have been surrounded by very powerful, very pay it forward type of women. And that has just really led me to where I am today. For background, I have an undergraduate degree in creative writing and then a master's degree in English. So it is probably the most surprising to me that I am here at Duke in business school as we're talking today. But I really owe that to these women in my life who just kind of would speak my name in any rooms where there were possibilities or opportunities. This goes back to the first boss that I had coming out of my first graduate program, Ricky Woolman. She has her MBA and she kind of exposed me to startup life, to entrepreneurship, to just being a woman who really goes after the things that you want in this world. And so I feel like I have received so much from the women in my life. And now it's kind of my job to provide that if I can for other women moving forward.
And can you both tell us a little bit more about your professional, personal journeys, however you want to answer the question, but specifically as a woman, maybe different things that you have gone through that maybe male counterparts haven't, or reasons, again, Kelsey, going back to your guiding mission, the reasons why you are so passionate about the work that you both do, formally and informally?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Coming from a non-traditional background, I feel like I've kind of experienced women really supporting women and taking care of each other, especially as they move into spaces where women might not traditionally be in. So for me, when I was immediately finishing my master's degree in English and moved to the Durham area and got this job at a small technology startup, I got really interested in entrepreneurship. And for me, being a younger woman with a background in English, in the humanities, I wasn't really sure how to bridge the gap between my history and what I wanted to get into. So I found it to be very powerful to have women kind of lighting the trail for me and guiding me. So for me, that's kind of been the biggest piece of my journey and how I've gotten to Fuqua today.
And what kind of entrepreneurship were you involved in?
So I had an idea for a business in 2020 that was really travel related. Of course, we know now that travel wasn't really happening. So I kind of steered away from that direction. But outside of my full-time job, I ended up pursuing a marketing consulting business and actually ended up working with a lot of startups in the Durham area. Many of them, I think almost all of them really, were female owned, which was very powerful. One is Rachel Classy's company. She is a Fuqua grad, so I was really proud to partner with a lot of women and Fuqua owned companies in the area.
Rhea, how about you?
So for me personally, I'm an immigrant. I come from Abu Dhabi. That's where I was born and raised for 13 years. And then I moved to Canada. I did my undergrad and part of my high school in Canada. and then now decided to, you know, pursue MBA here at Fuqua. And what that meant for me was undergrad I did was in engineering. So I guess it is a traditional background, you know, compared to Kelsey. But what I realized that moving into especially work, so I worked in tech consulting at EY. And what I noticed that was that I was most of the time the only woman on teams. And I was an intern at this one particular firm. And the comment that I got was, you're here because of a diversity quota. And to me, that was a shock as an intern because I didn't realize that people could be so forthcoming in terms of seeing women as diversity quotas and not because of the positions that they should be in. And so really frustrated, I almost took the comment and did really nothing with it. It sat with me for a while. I even contemplated myself if that's why they chose me. But I know very well that that wasn't the case. I was eventually promoted way, way quicker than the individual that made the comment. And so I had full faith in myself that I was there, not because of quotas, but because I was able to show that I had leadership capabilities. I had the ability to be in that position. And I think women or allies who are listening to this podcast, first of all, if there are people making comments like that, please ensure that you're standing up for them. I did wish that someone stood up for me, but I think on the bright side, I was able to formulate an opinion. And part of me even coming to business school is also standing up for other people and empowering them to do the same. So navigating from that here on, my mission out is really to ensure that women are empowered and you have the resources to do so.
I think that AWIB is very fortunate to have both of you. And Kelsey, going back to a story Rhea just shared with us, the challenge she had someone making a comment that she was a diversity quota, what do you think is the hardest challenge that you have faced in the professional work environment? And how do you think overcoming that has made you a stronger leader?
So I would say something that has been really beneficial for my personal and professional life has been learning how to be my own advocate. Kind of what Rhea was saying, wanting to stand up for other people, also knowing the power of standing up for yourself. I know that I am in large parts where I am today because of many people who've helped me. I'm also where I am because I've worked really hard and I've overcome a lot. And so I think learning to state that confidently and really believing in myself and fighting to put myself in doors that I want to be in has been hugely beneficial. We all know that women are put in so many roles where we're asked to be so many things to many people. I know that I've experienced that a lot, and with that comes expectations. But I think learning to maybe ignore sometimes the expectations that others have for me, staying true to myself and just advocating for the life that I want has, I think, given me that. So I would say for me, anyone professionally, personally, that would just be my advice to learn how to be your own advocate.
And a question for both of you. Oftentimes here at Fuqua, society as a whole, we talk about this idea of imposter syndrome. I think oftentimes women may experience it a bit more than men. I was curious your thoughts on that and if you feel comfortable sharing a story.
Absolutely. I feel like coming into business school with a background in the humanities, I felt imposter syndrome a lot going into fall one and in fall two. And then I think there were several moments working with male classmates or just people in general who I thought, quote unquote, had it all figured out, who maybe had more traditional backgrounds than I did, had certain strengths that I felt like I did not have. I saw moments where they were really doubting themselves, or I experienced moments where they would say, oh my gosh, you have this skill that I don't have. I wish that I could do this thing. Really made me reevaluate how I see myself and think that half the battle is just believing in yourself. I think if you can get to that point and just kind of, I hate to say fake it till you make it, but sometimes do that, you can really push yourself through a certain door because there is a level of confidence that I think is really important to bring. Sometimes that can't be 100% genuine, but I think that if you can just try to push yourself there and push past those feelings of imposter syndrome, you will realize that many other people experience this and we are not unique in that way. You know, it's hard out there.
Yeah, I don't think there's one person that goes through this program that has never felt that in some way, shape, or form. And I think your idea of fake it till you make it, I agree with that. I think it's this idea of one step after the other. You take one step and then one step, you know, try to break it down a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. I completely stand by the fake it until you make it and the power pose. That's my combination for addressing imposter syndrome. But on a more serious note, as I mentioned before, I had the experience of someone calling me a diversity quota. And that really, that's when the whole imposter syndrome struck, where I was like, I don't belong here. I felt like I was contributing less and less to discussions. And for me, it felt a sense of, wow, everybody else has it figured out. I don't know what I'm talking about. And then when I sat in some of these meetings, I was like, I had the same ideas that these people had. And I was like, wait, hold on a minute. I am here. I deserve to be here. And that's when I started thinking a lot about, let's bring this up, do more women talk about this. And so bringing it to the Professional Women's Network, everyone was like, yes, I have imposter syndrome. And there's been multiple times in the room where I thought about things, I just didn't say it because I was scared to say it. But then, you know, my male coworker said it and it was the same exact thought and they got the client recognition. And, you know, that's when the whole conversation started. And so I felt like everybody faces it, male or female. I think you go through it. I think for a large part, I think we play it, women play it more loudly in our heads. And I think you just need to break that barrier and know that, you know, your voice matters. You should stand up for yourself and know that whatever you're going through, the other person's also going through it. So just don't make it so big in your head. I think our head talks a lot of us down instead of that reframing it to shoot ourselves up.
That is such a good point. I remember a few times being in class here at Fuqua and, you know, professor asked a question. I was like, I think I know the answer. And then I'll like even start rehearsing how I'm going to phrase the sentence in my head. I'm like, this is so ridiculous. And then someone else just raises their hand and blurts it out. And I'm like, well, that passed. And are either of you Barbie fans? The movie from this past summer?
Yes, I'm a huge Barbie fan.
Rhea, how about you?
I'd say I can waver.
But you have seen the movie?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there is a very powerful monologue from that movie from America Ferrera, and I will read a portion of it and would love to hear both of your thoughts. You have to have money, but you can't ask for money because that's crass. You have to be a boss, but you can't be mean. You have to lead, but you can't squash other people's ideas. You're supposed to love being a mother, but don't talk about your kids all the time. You have to be a career woman, but also always be looking out for other people. You have to answer for men's bad behavior, which is insane, but if you point that out, you're accused of complaining. You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women because you're supposed to be part of the sisterhood. But always stand out and always be grateful. But never forget that the system is rigged. So find a way to acknowledge that, but also always be grateful.
I think every woman that I know who saw that scene ended up crying during it, because I think there's something about it that really clearly resonates. And it goes back to what I was just talking about, which is that women play so many roles to so many people. And I think that is what society asks of us, what the patriarchy asks of us. You could go on and on. I think that learning to escape kind of this fable of perfection that is put on us by the world is really freeing. That's easier said than done. And that's certainly easier for people who are in positions of privilege to do, which is important to acknowledge. But the moment that you are able in whatever way to free yourself from what people expect of you and to do what you want to do, I think is really powerful and freeing as a woman.
I have the same thoughts as Kelsey, just in terms of like expectations and what you set out for yourself, right? So I think a big part of it is removing and blocking out the noise that other people's expectations of you and you setting your goals and what is right. For instance, when you talk about people in general and them having opinions of you and you filling up multiple roles, I think a lot of it is eventually understanding that you have to take care of yourself first and you have to block out everything else that other people are going to say. Everybody comes in from a different perspective, different background. And I just think that you have to play multiple roles in society. And I just think that that adds a lot of pressure and no one needs to be taking on more pressure than on top of what other people expect you to be.
And here we are in the month of March, Women's History Month. Still have a long way to go in equity. But what are some significant achievements by women in history that you think often go overlooked?
So I am going to get on my soapbox about something I am very passionate about, which is the femtech industry. So this is female technology, basically products, software, tools being created to support women's health. Historically, if you don't know this, this is a great opportunity to learn. Women have been more likely to be misdiagnosed with health conditions or simply misheard. We also know that the maternal mortality rate is very high, especially for Black women, women of color. So I think that it's really important to kind of get familiar with some of the strides that we've made in terms of funding women's healthcare initiatives and also just bringing this to light. Back in the fall, we had a woman on campus to speak to us about femtech. Her name is Dr. Brittany Barreto, and she is just this real all-star researcher, founder, investor in the space. And she talked about how there is now more money going to femtech ventures, which is really important because things like all medication has only been tested on people, women who are on hormonal birth control pills. That's true. So we don't know what the health effects of medication are on women who have not been taking the hormonal birth control pill. That's a really big deal because birth control is an addition to your body. It's something that affects your hormones. Kind of just learning about these discrepancies between where we are with men's healthcare and women's healthcare is really important. So that's something that I think is especially important to draw attention to during this month.
I remember that event with Dr. Barreto, and I think it was half an hour, 45 minutes. I think I learned more in that period about women's health, especially on the investment side, than I have at any other point in business school. So Dr. Barreto was great.
We love her. I think everyone left that meeting feeling really angry and really wanting to start work or put money into femtech.
Ditto that. I sat in that event too, and I just thought it was well attended by both men and women. And I had a male friend come up to me and say, "Ooh, this is a space that looks interesting. I want to invest." So fantastic job, Kelsey. I know you brought the speaker in, so kudos to you. In terms of, for me, who is a woman that inspires me, I think it's always going to be Indra Nooyi. She is the former CEO of PepsiCo, and she has released her book. I know it's available out. And personally, I just think that for someone like her, she's an immigrant woman who came to the United States to do her MBA, and she pivoted into roles where she couldn't see other people that looked like her in the boardroom and successfully navigated to the top while having a career and children. I think that's just very inspirational in a time in the United States where that was very rare, especially for an immigrant woman to do. And for me, that's always very inspirational how she speaks about looking at a career. And she always talks about how a woman cannot have it all and you have to balance multiple priorities. It's like juggling plastic and glass balls in the air. You have to hold on to your glass ones really tightly, which is, you know, your family and your certain aspects of your career, and some things you have to let go, like maybe not attending every single event from your child's school. And that's completely fine. And so she talks about that a lot, which I think is really inspirational. But I think a lot of it comes from my own personal experience with my mother, who tirelessly also worked and raised three kids. So I'm the oldest, but I have two younger brothers with me. And I just know that it was very hard for her and other women of color to navigate their journeys, especially in roles of leadership higher up.
And so she has, you said in her book, this idea that women can't have it all. You have to balance. Kelsey and Rhea, do you think women can have it all?
I definitely don't think women can have it all. I think you do definitely have to prioritize in terms of what you want. I think it's very, very promising to think that you can have it all. But the reality is you really cannot have it all. You have to juggle between your work, your family, being a caretaker for your parents, because that's a responsibility that falls into your plate. And even having a supportive partner can help. But I don't necessarily think that your supportive partner can necessarily take everything off of your plate that you would have in your head. So
if everyone is ready for a hot take, here's what I think. I don't think that anyone can have it all. I kind of resent the statement of women can or cannot have it all, because I think that just adds to this pressure that's on women to be doing everything. I think that if you have supportive family members, partners, friends, that takes a lot of the burden of day-to-day life off your plate. But I don't think it should just come down to women trying to figure this answer out. I think it should come down to everyone figuring out what are the expectations that the world puts on certain people and how can we help alleviate some of those.
I think that's a wonderful take, Kelsey. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. I don't think that's a hot take. I think we need more of that in the world. And I guess building off that, what is one change or goal that you both would like to see within society as it relates to women's equity?
I would really love to see equal, readily accessible reproductive care and sexual care. I think that if we have this goal to give women the life that they want, whether that's being at home with kids, whether that is being in the workforce, that can't happen unless there is access in all ways for all people to reproductive care. That is my personal take and something that I feel really strongly about, which I think also goes back to kind of learning more and educating yourself about femtech, because there are a lot of companies doing important work out there, getting people access to reproductive care.
And you've done some volunteer work in that space before, right?
Yeah. So I've done some work with people who are survivors of sexual and domestic violence, which is something that is really near and dear to my heart. I feel like we need to have more organizations out there that can help people move on from acts of violence, because I think that touches so many people, maybe more than we initially think. There have also been companies that I have worked with, whether that's in like a mentored study position through Fuqua or just through some volunteer work that stems more into general femtech and reproductive or just female healthcare in general.
Thank you, Kelsey, for that. I think that's a very solid stance. I'm going to speak off of personal experience, but I really do think that all companies should equip a equity-based policy for women at the top. And what I really mean by that is making sure that teams are not forming boys clubs, for instance, and really being very mindful of the fact that you're creating events that are inclusive and women can attend those events. I think that's a number one, very important, because a lot of promotional based conversations happen with water cooler conversations or at events like golfing and things like that. And not necessarily everyone's interested in golfing. So having events that are more inclusive brings that community a little bit closer. So I wish every company really enacts on that model.
And building off both your answers, Kelsey, you talked about improved access to healthcare, reproductive healthcare. Rhea, you just mentioned equity in the workplace for women. What do you think the best way is for students here at Fuqua, both male and female, to work towards those goals as well as others within society?
I think that supporting the Association of Women in Business is a great way to do that, Jenna. And Rhea and I would be glad to speak with any students who are curious about how they, you know, individually can get involved with that. But in all seriousness, AWIB is a fantastic diversity club that we have here at Fuqua, and it really brings both women and allies together throughout the community. I know that we've had so many really interesting events this year that range from empowerment in terms of professional, personal. We had some more healthcare-focused events this past year, kind of on the topic of reproductive health. And so, you know, this is a goal that we have going into this upcoming year's co-presidents together, is just making sure that we're creating meaningful events for people from all walks of life, whatever background you have coming into the school. And so I would really encourage people to keep an eye out for the AWIB calendar just to see what events they can participate in, because I think that caring about women extends way deeper beyond the month of March. So I would really encourage that.
Kelsey said that fantastically. The only thing from my end that I would like to add is the fact that we really care about our allies. I don't think we can do this by ourselves. We need more men advocating for women and stepping up, because I think that's where the real change also can be made. The more that we have you out there, the more you can spread the message out. And I think that's where the real impact also starts bubbling up.
So on this topic of allyship, what is one thing or a few things that you wish men knew about the life of a woman, being a woman, woman in business school, however you want to think about it?
For me, I would say that we need to stop assigning secretarial work to women. Whatever setting you are in, stop requiring women to take notes. Stop expecting them to set meetings up. I don't care if you think that you're quote unquote bad at this thing. None of us want to schedule a Google Meets call, but we just have to because this is how things get done. And so I think just kind of from allies having that awareness or thought behind your actions and just thinking, you know, my female teammate has maybe been asked 3 times today to take notes for this meeting. Maybe I should just step up and do it, even if my handwriting is quote unquote not as good as hers. So that's my personal feedback, just kind of being really aware and intentional with your thoughts and actions.
And what about you, Rhea?
I think Kelsey laid it out when she mentioned about the whole, you know, secretarial task. I remember one of the speakers for the Investing in Women conference. Now, mind you, she's the CEO of a very big sports management firm. She walked into a client room and the male associate, not of that firm, of another firm, asked her to go bring a cup of coffee. Mind you, this is the CEO. He assumed she was a secretary and she basically said, yeah, I can grab you a coffee when I feel like getting one myself. And I felt like that was a very nice way of handling that situation. That really resonated with me because I just want to share with, you know, folks that are listening to this podcast that if you are ever in that position, don't just say, yes, I will get one for you right away and run for that coffee, but do stand up for yourself. And slightly off of that is just ensure that whenever their women are hesitant sometimes in a boardroom to speak. And I think just scanning the room, you can kind of realize from women's faces, or I shouldn't even say women, just from people's faces, whether there is an intention to talk or contribute and be inclusive, invite them to that discussion.
And I think that's such a great point that by working towards woman equity, it really benefits the entire world. It's not just the woman.
Agreed.
And so I know that both of you are stepping into this role. It's been maybe a few weeks, and I know that Monica and Ashley have done a lot of great work in the past year. What are some things that they have started or really been working on that you look forward to continuing?
Monica and Ashley really did a good job at making sure there were a lot of different events available to the Fuqua, you know, women and ally community. And so I hope that we're able to pick up from where they started and really create a variety of events that are targeted to all kinds of people at all kinds of parts of their business school journey. So we are incredibly grateful for them for carrying on the tradition from the co-presidents before them. And we hope to take that with us into the next year.
Well, I know that everyone at the Fuqua Show here and the Fuqua community are very excited to see all that you both accomplish in the next year and then the generation after that and after that. And thank you both for being here today, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much for having us, Jenna.
Yes, thank you.